We're holding on Samach Beis Amud Aleph, the top line. We learned yesterday that the Mizbeach in the second Beis Hamikdash was larger than the one in the first. The first Beis Hamikdash, the base of the Mizbeach, was 28 by 28 Amos, and then it narrows as it goes up because you have the Yisod and the Sozer and so forth, and the Makom HaMa'aracha, the place where they actually burnt the Korbanos, was 20 by 20 Amos. And then we said in the second Beis Hamikdash, the base was 32, and the Makom HaMa'aracha was 32 by 32, and the Makom HaMa'aracha was 24 by 24. So why is that? So we learned yesterday two explanations so far. We had Rabbi Yosef saying because the size was just not big enough. So, and the question was, why not? And the answer is because in the second Beis Mikdash, they didn't have Eish Shel Shemayim. They didn't have the fire, even though there was a fire Min HaShemayim, it wasn't a Siyatan. It wasn't assisting in burning the Korbanos like it did in the first Beis Mikdash. So therefore, they had just regular human lit fire that was burning the Korbanos, and that goes a lot more slowly. So therefore, they needed a bigger space so that they could have a bigger fire. Then we have Robin's explanation, which is that the shistin, the channels through which the water and the wine poured in the Mizbeach would drain underground. In the first Beis Hamikdash, they had that area outside the Mizbeach, and in the second Beis Hamikdash, they darshan the psukim differently to say that they should go on the Mizbeach itself, and they should be inside the Mizbeach. So therefore, that means that there's going to have to be channels, the channels are going to have to be inside the Mizbeach. The space where the shistin go is going to have to be incorporated into the area of the Mizbeach, and then when the water and wine are poured, they'll flow down through channels built into the Mizbeach. So now the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef says, actually, I have a different reason. How could I have said a reason why the Mizbeach was larger in the second Beis Hamikdash? Rashi points out, we find in many places in Shas that Rabbi Yosef at one point in his life was very sick and forgot his learning. So many times as Talmidim, we find his Talmidim having to remind him what he had taught previously. Here, he himself is saying that I realized that what I taught before was I had forgotten something that it says in a Braisa that gives a different reason why the Mizbeach was larger in the second Beis Hamikdash. He says, Lav Hainu D'Tanya, isn't this explained by what it says in a Braisa? The Braisa refers to a Pasuk in Ezra. In Ezra, where it describes how they came and built the set and started building the second Beis Hamikdash. So the Pasuk is Vayachinu Es HaMizbeach Al Mechonosav, and they ask the Pasuk, whatever, Vayachinu HaMizbeach Al Mechonosav. They set up the Mizbeach on its foundations. Now that means, the Braisa explains, it means that they reached the final size of the Mizbeach. In other words, Mechonosav, in the simple sense, we would say it means, in other words, that they found the remnants of the Mizbeach from the first Beis Hamikdash, and they built the new Mizbeach on top of that. But now we're understanding what the Braisa says. What it really means is that they figured out Mechonosav, the proper size of the Mizbeach. So they realized something about the size of the Mizbeach that had not been given to earlier generations, the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. So the Gemara asks, how could that be? We find when David put together the blueprint of the first Beis Hamikdash and gave it over to Shlomo, he says, all of it is in writing from the hand of Hashem, who gave it to me to understand. So it was all given to him, it was all given to Shmuel the Nevuah, and then it was given over to David. Actually, elsewhere it talks about that it went from generation to generation. Shmuel himself received it from earlier generations. Anyway, the point is that all of it is with Ruach HaKodesh. So how could it be that now the Anshei Knesset HaGdola were able to achieve and to understand something that the earlier, that David was not? So what does that mean? So Elo, Amar Rav Yosef, Kro Ashkach V'Dorosh. So rather, Rav Yosef says it's not so much that they were given something, a new nevuah that wasn't given before, but rather the Anshei Knesset HaGdola darshened a pasuk which it says in Divrei Yomim, and which Shlomo did not fully understand the import of that pasuk to darshen it appropriately. So they darshened it and realized that it tells us something about the size of the Mizbeach. So now, in other words, if it was a matter of Nevuah, then you'd have the question, how is it that the Nevuah to David was incomplete? But now we're saying it's not a matter of Nevuah, it's a matter of Darshan and Psukim, so then it's very possible to say that Shlomo did not think Darshan the Pasuk this way, and that the Anshei Knesset HaGdola realized that this is how we have to Darshan it. So, in fact, actually, one of the Mephoshim, the Yad David, explains what Rabbi Yosef is saying is that, in fact, David was implicitly given in this Pasuk license to make the Mizbeach larger. But Shlomo didn't find the need to do it because they had the Eish Shamayla. Now, when they came to the second Beis Hamikdash, it's not so much, in other words, according to this way of looking at it, not so much that Shlomo didn't realize to darshan in the Pasuk, but rather that, that Shlomo didn't need to darshan it because in his times, the Mizbeach of 28 by 28 was big enough. But now, when they came to build the second Beis Hamikdash, and they're realizing, as Rabbi Yosef said before, that that Mizbeach is not large enough for the purpose, because, again, the fireman Hashemayim is not assisting in burning the Korbanos. Now they found a Pasuk that they can use as permission to enlarge the Mizbeach. Namely, the Pasuk says in Divrei Yomim, Vayomer David, David said, after Hashem had told him to go to the barn of Aravna Yabusi and buy it and bring a korban over there, and you have the whole story. So now, the Pasuk says in Divrei Yomim, Vayomer David, Zehu Beis Hashem Ha'alekim, this is the house of Hashem, Vizem Mizbeach La'Ola Yisrael, and this is the Mizbeach that will be for Olas, for the Jewish people. So why do you have to mention both things? The house of Hashem, which is the Heichel, and the Mizbeach, means key vice. Means we should understand, we should douse in this pasuk to understand that the Mizbeach is like the Heichel. Ma bias, shishim amma, just like the bias, the main building of the Beis Hamikdash, is 60 amas long, because we have 40 amas of the Kodesh and 20 amas of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, at Mizbeach, shishim amma, therefore they understood from that the Mizbeach can be as much as 60 amas long. 60 amas long and wide, because the Gemara is going to say later that it has to be square. So they realized, they darshan this pasuk, that the Mizbeach could be up to 60 amos in size, and therefore that they didn't need 60 amos. They only needed to enlarge it by 4 amos, but they had license to do that based on that new understanding of that pasuk. So that's how they could enlarge it based on that. Actually, the Sfas Emes says that it may be, you know, here we're saying they have license to increase it up to 60 amas, but in practice they didn't need that large. 32 amas was enough for them. However, the Sfas Emes gives an interesting explanation. What it means is that that when they have a new mizbeach of 32 amas, if we count if we don't count the yisoid and the soviv, because those are further down, if we count just the surface, the top of the mizbeach, which is 28 by 28, plus the kevesh, which we're going to say further on, was 32 amas long, then that actually reaches 60. Tosfos actually brings from Gemara and Chulin that seems to imply that you can't make the Mizbeach any larger than it is. So the Sfas Emes points out that also fits very nicely with this. It means they actually did reach the maximum of 60. How did they do that? By having a Mizbeach whose top is 28 by 28. Because the base of it is 32 by 32, once you get to the place of the Kronos, then you're 28 by 28, because it goes in an Amma on each side for the Yisod and an Amma on each side for the Soviv, so that subtracts 4 and leaves 28, plus 32 for the Kevesh, there's your 60. So we can understand it that way, so in that case they actually did enlarge it to the maximum that it could be. Another way of understanding it, the Chassam Sofer in a Sefer Zevach Torah on Masechta gives a different explanation. He says that yes, based on what Rav Yosef is saying over here, they could have made it all the way. The Mizbeach itself could have been as much as 60 by 60, but we have in the next lines, we have a different explanation of how they knew where to build the Mizbeach, and according to that explanation, not necessarily is there a comparison between the Heichel and the Mizbeach such that you could make it as large as 60. The maximum, according to that way of looking at it, wouldn't be the 32 that they made it. So the Gemara says, now, let's figure out, how did they figure out where exactly the Mizbeach should be built, and where exactly the Heichel should be built? And in particular, the place of the Mizbeach, that Amman points out, the place of the Mizbeach has to be very, very exact, because it has to be the exact place where Adam Arishon brought a Korban, and where Noach brought a Korban, and where Avraham did the Akedah, and so on and so forth. So you can't play around with it. So the question is, Bishlema Bayis Minkarot Sarosai. The question is, the house itself, the Heichel, they could still recognize on the ground where it had been. Because even though the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, the foundations were still there. In fact, the Yerushalmi, that seems, in fact, there's a Bavli, first of all, there's a Bavli in Yuma, that implies that even parts of the walls survived the Churban Bayis Rishon, and you also have, I think the Yerushalmi mentions that the floor survived, so therefore it was easy enough to tell where the Heichel was supposed to be, and therefore to build on that exact spot. Elam is Deach Mino Yadi, but how did exactly get... What?
I mean, actually, recently, a few days ago, there was archaeological findings of correspondence between Shishkiyahu and the king of Ashur regarding taxes having been paid. So you're right. I mean, all the archaeological foundations should be there in place as a first temple, that is.
Right. So actually what it is when it comes to the second Beis Hamikdash, we know one of the five things we commemorate on Tisha B'Av is V'nech Rishon Ir, the city was plowed up. Tunus Rufus, the Gemara says, the Roman governor plowed up Yerushalayim, and in particular the Beis Hamikdash, so that nothing is recognizable of it. It's very difficult, even nowadays, there's quite a lot of argument. Among archaeologists, actually, they tried, based on the Mishnayos and Midas, and based on various other, on findings on the ground. You have, for example, there was a British survey from the 1860s, so between all of that, they try to come up with different theories exactly where the Heichal and the Mizbeach were within the present-day Harabayis, and there are like 12 different opinions. But yeah, what we're saying is, the first Beis Hamikdash, the destruction was not quite so total. Parts of the walls may even have survived, and certainly the floors and the foundations did. So therefore, it's easy enough to tell where the Heichal is, and therefore to build it on the exact same spot. Elam is Mizbeach, Menayabi, but how did they know with the Mizbeach? Because the Mizbeach, now the Mizbeach also had a Yesod, but Maharsha points out the Yesod of the Mizbeach was not quite so embedded into the ground as the foundations of the Heichal. The Heichal was a big building, so it had to have foundations dug deep into the ground. But the Mizbeach, the Yesod of it, as we learned in the previous parak, was basically a mixture of stones and binder poured into a wooden form placed on top of the floor, and therefore, once the Mizbeach was destroyed, it wasn't necessarily so easy to tell where it is. So how could they tell? Now, Mephoshim asks a Balabatish question. I mean, they know where one thing is supposed to be relative to another. So once they know where the Heichal is supposed to be, shouldn't they automatically know where the Mizbeach should be? But okay, the Gemara is still wondering how. Maybe the question is, again, since they're enlarging the Mizbeach, then the question is, how do they know in which direction they can enlarge it exactly? Well, Amar Rav Elazar, so Rav Elazar says, Ro Mizbeach Bonui, because they saw with Nevuah, again, you have Anshe Knesset HaGdolah over here, and among them were several Nevi'im. They saw with Nevuah Mizbeach Bonui, the Mizbeach and Shamayim built, U'michol HaSar HaGadol Oymer U'makriv Olav, and Michol, the great Sar, the great prince of the Malachim, is standing and offering Korbanos. So and that's directly above the space where the Mizbeach is supposed to be down here on earth, and that way they could tell exactly where it's supposed to be. What are the Korbanos that Michol is bringing? Tosfos brings at the end of Menachos, where it mentions this point also about Michol bringing Korbanos. One explanation is that he's offering the neshamas of tzaddikim, that he's elevating them to a higher level. So there's places in Chassidus where it talks about what that means, is that Michal, being the Malach of Chesed, he's infusing those malachas, neshamas of the tzaddikim that are in Gan Eden, he's infusing them with a higher level of ava and a bittul towards the Eibishter, and therefore in that sense he's offering them and bringing them closer to Hashem. The other explanation, Tosfos says over there, is that he's offering kvosim shel esh, a sheep of fire, in other words, like ruchni sik a sheep, that he's offering on this Mizbeach and Shamayim. In any case, so they saw, and that's directly Bechlal, the Beis Hamikdash and Shamayim, the Beis Hamikdash Shamayla is exactly parallel to the Beis Hamikdash down here on earth, the same way there's Yerushalayim Shamayla and Yerushalayim Shamata. So therefore, when they see the exact spot in Shamayim where Michal is bringing these Korbanos, then they know exactly from that where the Mizbeach down here on earth is supposed to be. That's one explanation. But Rabbi Yitzchok Napcha Amar, Rabbi Yitzchok Napcha says a different explanation. Efrei show Yitzchok Rosh Munach Ba'isim Mokim. They saw the ashes of Yitzchok that was placed in that place. Now, Yitzchok himself, obviously, of course, was not burned. In the end, the Malach came to Avram and told him to stop. But we mean, in other words, that afterwards Avram took he took the ram and offered it in place of his son, and Hashem considers it as chus, as though he actually offered Yitzchok, and therefore, like those ashes are still there. Again, maybe not necessarily begashmius, beruchnius, but the point would be, in other words, that they saw that, and that told them where the Mizbeach is supposed to be. Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni says a third explanation. Mikol ha'bayis kuloi heirichu reach k'toras. Throughout, in all the area of the Beis Hamikdash, they could smell the fragrance of the k'toras. Even though it was 50-odd years since the first Beis Hamikdash had been destroyed, nevertheless, the smell of the k'toras still persisted. And by the way, you have a Gemara in Yuma, where the Gemara mentions something similar about the Mishkan Shiloh. One of the Chachamim says that he visited the ruins of Mishkan Shiloh, and that was over 1,000 years after it had been destroyed, and he said he could still smell the fragrance of the k'toras from between the walls over there. So the k'toras is powerful stuff, and the fragrance of it persists for a long time. So now, it was only 50 years after the first Beis Hamikdash had been destroyed, so in most of the area, they could still smell the smell of the k'toras. Misham, but from that particular area where the Mizbeach was, Heirichu Reach Eivorim, they smelled instead the smell of burning limbs of Korbanos that had been burnt on the Mizbeach over there. In other words, only in that place was the smell of the Korbanos powerful enough, Marshall explains, was powerful enough to overpower the smell of the Ketoros. It's an interesting point, by the way, that Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim brings Rambam brings over there B'chlal. He tries to give a lot of explanations for a lot of the mitzvahs, including various parts of the Avodah. He says, why was there a mitzvah to bring Ketoras in the first place? And he says, almost like a Balabatish answer, because there was such an odor of burnt meat and burnt fat over there, so therefore you need a Ketoras, you need a sweet-smelling mixture of incense to counteract that. Here from, and in Chassidus, it talks about a deeper meaning behind that, is that the korbanos are generally brought for Averis, so to speak, you have an odor remaining behind of the Avera, and Ketoras represents then cleaning that odor up and replacing it with a sweet smell. But here from Marusha, actually, it comes out almost the other way around, that in that particular spot where the Mizbeach was, the smell of the Evorim was so overpowering that even 50 years later, it was still there and then counteracted the smell of the Ketoras, and therefore they smelled Davka that over there. In any case, that's a third way, then, that's how they knew. So it's interesting, by the way, that it comes out, according to two opinions, they saw something over there, and according to the third opinion, they smelled something over there. B'chlal, when we talk about experiences of Elikus, we usually have we talk about hearing, like Shema Yisrael, which is kind of like a lower level in the sense, like when you hear something, yeah, you know it's there, but it's not the same thing as experiencing, as we say, in a Dermish Shmiel Ri'ya. Seeing is not comparable, seeing is much greater than hearing, hearing is not comparable to seeing. So here we have two possibilities, that they saw, which is a higher level, and then we have one where they smelt, which is like we find by Mashiach, where he's going to be able to smell, V'arichei b'Yiras Hashem, he'll be able to smell who has Yiras Hashem and who doesn't, and who's guilty and who's innocent. So here we have, and maybe in a similar vein, that we have, therefore, one opinion is saying that they use their sense of smell to detect where the Mizbeach is. So the Gemara continues. Omer Rav Abba, so in any case, so that's how they knew. So in one of those three ways, they knew where the Mizbeach is. But now the Gemara brings further. Omer Rav Abba Chana, Omer Rav Yechanan, Shloisha Nevi'im Olerim Mohim in Agoyla. There were three Nevi'im, Chagas, Chari, and Malachi, who came from Golos with them. When they came to build the second Beis Hamikdash, then they had these three Nevi'im with them. Echad Shehed Lehem Al Mizbeach, one of them testified about the Mizbeach, that they have, like we said before, that they have that they can enlarge it, that they can enlarge it up to 60 amos, like Rashi said, or at least up to 32 amos, like the Sfasemis said. Tosfos wonders why would they need a novi for that? They have the Psukim in Yechezkel, which describes the Mizbeach of the third Beis Hamikdash, and that means that when they built the second Beis Hamikdash, they partially followed Yechezkel's blueprint, and that particular part, the Rambam explains, they followed Yechezkel's blueprint wherever they could understand it. There were parts of it that they couldn't understand, and therefore they couldn't build according to it. Mefarshim explained the reason behind that was because that blueprint is meant for a Beis Hamikdash that's never going to be destroyed, since the second Beis Hamikdash turned out not to be that, then therefore Hashem didn't allow them to build according to that blueprint. In any case, the Mizbeach, though, Yechezkel's description of the Mizbeach is fairly clear, and he says that it's 32 by 32 at the bottom and 24 by 24 at the Makom HaMa'aracha. So, and in fact, the Mishnah in Midas says that's precisely, they use that pasuk in determining the size of the Mizbeach on the second Beis Hamikdash. So why do they need a Navi to tell us that? So Tosfos explains, because without the Navi telling you, you could misunderstand that. So what does Yechezkel say? He says that the He says the Ariel, which is the area where the Korbanos are burnt, is 12 by 12, which, as we explained the other day, that really means that you measure 12 in each direction from the middle, and that comes to 24 by 24. So then you see that it means, so if it's 24 by 24 at the Makom HaMa'aracha, and you have the walkway for the Kohenim and the Kronos and the Soviv and the Yesod, then that gives you 32 by 32. What do they need a Navi to tell them that? Tosfos explains that without the Navi, they would have thought that maybe the 24 by 24 means the top with the Kronos, and that would result in a 20 by 20, Makom HaMa'aracha, like in Shlomo's Mizbeach. They wouldn't have known that should be any larger than Shlomo's, except for a Navi telling them that it should be larger. So therefore, that's what the first Navi told them that. I'm afraid you discussed, by the way, we know you can't paskin halacha based on a Navi, so it doesn't necessarily mean to paskin halacha. It means basically that he's telling them a fact which existed until then, which had never been recorded, and now he's telling them that. So basically to tell them the Metzius. So one Navi told them that. The second one testified for them about the place of the Mizbeach based on any of the things that we said before, either because they saw either that particular Navi saw the Mizbeach where Michal is bringing Korbanos, or saw the ashes of Yitzchak, or smelt the smell of the Torah, or maybe just it was a direct Navor to him. The third one gave them Edus, Shemakrivin, that they can bring korbanos on the mizbeach, even though there's no Beis Hamikdash, even though the heichal had not been built yet. And in fact, the Pesukim and Ezra say that they did exactly that. They built the mizbeach and they immediately started bringing korbanos on it, even though it took a few months before they had enough material together to even start building the heichal. And then, of course, there was the delay because the kusim and everybody else got involved, and the masod on them to kodesh and achashverosh, and the work was stopped for many years. But all that time, they still had the mizbeach and they still were able to bring korbanos on it. So this one of the Nevi'im told them that point, that the Kedusha of the Beis Hamikdash continues to exist even after it's destroyed, as we talked about in great detail the other day about that whole question of how that works to get, how that fits together with the question about the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, as if there was that very, very long Tosfos on Samach Amud Beis and Samach Amud Aleph that discusses that whole point, whether the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael and of the Beis Hamikdash are interconnected, or whether they're two separate things, and so on and so forth. So this third Navi is telling them that when it comes to the Beis Hamikdash, at least the Kedusha of it still exists exactly as it did before, and therefore they can bring Korbanos on the Mizbeach even without there being a heichal. That's one group.
But that's at a time when the whole Jewish people was gathered there.
No,
wasn't
they weren't.
It?
That's the point. No, as we discussed the other day, only a minority of the Jewish people came there. Only 42,000 and some came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael to build the second Beis Hamikdash. So that was a minority of the Jewish people, and yet the heichal still continued to have the Har HaBayis and the Azara still continued to have its Kedusha of before. That's what we were talking about before. Does the same thing apply to the rest of Eretz Yisrael, or does the rest of Eretz Yisrael maybe forfeit its Kedusha when it was conquered by other nations and didn't necessarily get it back at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, as particularly the Rambam says it did not, because most of the Jewish people were not there? So yes, so there'd be a difference in that regard, as we talked about the other day.
Under which king was that?
This was under King Koresh. Koresh, the king of Persia, announced that everybody who wants to go build the Beis Hamikdash can. 150 years earlier or so, Yeshaya had said Nevuos and even mentioned Koresh by name. The historian Josephus actually mentions, interestingly, that when Koresh became king and conquered and destroyed the empire of Babel, people, Jews, brought him a copy of Sefer Yeshaya with that Nevuah about him, and he was very impressed that, wow, there was a Navi of Hashem 100-odd years earlier who knew that I'm going to rule and I'm going to conquer Babel, and even called me by name. Well, then I have to fulfill what he said, that I'm going to do that. And he gave orders that they can do that. Then afterwards, the Pesukim and Ezra describe, once they came there and built the Mizbeach and started working on the Heichal, then the Tzora Yehuda and Binyamin, the enemies of Yehuda and Binyamin, which includes the Kusim and various other groups over there, got involved. And they ended up sending a letter of Mesira to Koresh, telling him basically that if you allow the Jews to rebuild, they're going to rebel against you, and therefore he rescinded the permission, and it continued to be rescinded throughout the time of Ahasuerus, and 2 years into Daryavash's rule. Eventually, Daryavash, the son of Ahasuerus, became king, and 2 years into his reign, the Nevi'im, Chagas, Chari, and Malachi, told them it's time to continue, and they restarted the work, and then this time they got official permission that they can continue. Yeah.
So during all that time, they offered korbanos?
So the Pasuk says in Ezra that they offered korbanos once they built the Mizbeach. Did they actually continue the korbanos continuously throughout all those 18 years? I don't know if it says one way or the other. Maybe at some point it's very possible at some point people may have given up and stopped. I don't know. I don't think it says one way or the other.
So then halachically it is possible then.
It's possible what?
To offer korbanos without the full Beit HaMikdash being revealed.
But that's when you know the place of the Mizbeach, as they did, because they have the Nevi'im telling them, and they have Koyanim who are known to be legitimate, and they have Bigdei Kohuna, and they're all able to be Tohar, and so on and so forth. Whether that applies nowadays, when we don't have Koyanim Miyuchosim, and we don't know how to make the Bigdei Kohuna, and we're all Tomei, and we don't know the exact Mokam HaMizbeach, et cetera, then you have a big question whether it's possible nowadays, yes.
So concerning the real Makam of the Mizbeach, Israeli archaeological physicists have found a way to dig, to explore without digging 60 feet below the surface of the ground to know exactly if there are structures there.
Okay.
Just wanted to let you know that.
That's good to know. If they can find something to them, then more power to them. But as it is, for example, you have, let's say, the rock and the dome of the rock. The Radvaz writes that it's the Evan Shesia. But you have, actually, there are archaeologists who think that might be the base of the Mizbeach. So, yeah, if it is, then maybe it is. I don't know. Yeah. All right. Anyway, let's go on. The Masnisa Tona, in a Braisa, we learn a different version of what the three Nevi'im told them. Three Nevi'im came up with them from Golos. The first one, according to this version, told them two things about the Mizbeach. About the Mizbeach, that it can be enlarged, and about the extra size, and about the extra size of the Mizbeach. One Navi told them both of those things. Although Karen Ora explains that actually Rabbi Lezman Yaakov, we learned earlier in our perek, he holds the whole Mizbeach was in the south side of the Azara, and you wouldn't have, therefore, if we said before that the Mizbeach could be as much as 60 amas long, there wouldn't be room for that and the Kevesh all in the south half of the Azara, so maybe not necessarily, So maybe according to him, when he was made to them, Alam Mizbeach, just means that they can enlarge it by four amas, but not necessarily that they should enlarge it up to 60, like we said before, said the Ferenara. Anyway, so one Nabi told them about that, both things about the Mizbeach. The Echad Shehed Lehem Shemakriv Hanaf Bishen Bais. The second one teaches them the din that they can bring korbanos on this Mizbeach, even though the Beis Mikdash has not been built yet. The Echad, and the third one, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Shehed Lehem Ala Torah Shetikos of Ashuris. The third one testified for them that the Torah is to be written in Ashuri script. Because originally, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, Rashi brings it over here, originally the Torah was written in Ksav Livunah, which is also known as Ksav Ivri. You have like on ancient inscriptions from Eretz Yisrael from the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, and coins from the time of the second Beis HaMikdash are written in Ksav Ivri, they're called in English Paleo Hebrew. You can find, you look for pictures of the inscription from Chizkiyahu's tunnel and from various other than, and various things like that. You'll find this system of writing that a few of the letters are recognizable in shape. A shin, for example, is somewhat like a shin in Ksav Ashuri. It's shaped like a W, and a few other letters like that also, but many of them you wouldn't be able to recognize unless you actually look at a table of the script. In any case, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, according to one opinion, there's actually a machloikas in the Gemara and Sanhedrin over there. One opinion is that the Torah was originally given in Ksav Ivri, and then in Ezra's times, they were told in Hashemayim that it should be changed to Ksav Ashuri, the square script that we use nowadays in Sifrei Torah. According to that, the Gemara explains over there that there's a hint to it in the Pasuk and Devarim that one day the script is going to be changed. So then we're saying that one Nabi tells them that point that the script, that now it's time for the script to be changed. The Gemara mentions over there also when the famous story with Belshazzar, where a hand goes and writes on the wall, Mene Mene Tekel Parsin, and none of Belshazzar's advisors can understand it until he calls in Daniel. That was the first time that the Ksav Ashuri had been publicly displayed, and that was why, according to that opinion, that's why none of Belshazzar's ministers could understand it, because a new kind of script. The other way of understanding it, the Gemara says, is that no, the Torah was originally given in Ksav Ashuri, and that never changed. According to that, though, the Gemara says there is still they definitely use Ksav Ivri for mundane purposes, for non-holy purposes, and according to that opinion, actually the Gemara says that when at a time when the Jewish people sinned and weren't worthy of using Ksav Ashuri, then Hashem caused them to forget it and to use instead Ksav Ivri. So according to that, then, the idea would be that the Nevi'im are reestablishing for them that forgotten script. There is an enormous amount of discussion about that. There's an interesting point that the Radvaz makes, that maybe even when we talk about when they sin, may even be the first luchos versus the second luchos. He says, based on relevant Gemaras, that maybe even the first luchos were written in Ksav Ashuri, the script that we're familiar with, and that's when the Gemara would say, for example, the middle of the Mem and the Samach hung there b'derech nes, because those letters completely surround, have a hole in the middle of them. And then in the second luchos already would have already been in Ksav Ivri. As I said, there's quite a bit of discussion about that. But according to that, there was a period of time when they were writing Tisvei Kodesh in Ksav Ivri. Then now the third Navi is coming and telling them that no, we have to write in Ksav Ashuri. There was an interesting idea, actually, the Mekeves HaMishnah brings on this in the Rambam, that it may mean that at the moment the Novi says this, then all, let's say, for example, people had Sifrei Torah, people had Tefillin, Mezuzahs, that were written in Ksav Ivri, all of a sudden, on the spot, all of them would become posel, and they have to have new ones written in Ksav Ashuri. On the other hand, there's an argument that maybe all this time, at least Tefillin and Mezuzahs, were written in Ksav Ashuri. Maybe only Sifrei Torah they were writing in Ksav Ivri, because they were learning from them, and that was the only script people were familiar with to learn from. And in that case, at least their Tefillin and Mezuzahs wouldn't have become possible on the spot. Okay. Getting back to the Mizbeach, the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Keren, that
the Mizbeach... Who created the Ksav Ivri?
So who created the Ksav Ivri? It's a good question. I mean, Ksav Ashuri is given min HaShemayim, Ksav Ivri. So again, especially if, for example, according to the Radvaz, if already the second Luchas were given in Ksav Ivri, then it's also something that existed at that time. It might be a script that regular people came up with. It might also be a script that Hashem, to begin with, came up with, that it's an alternate script that's to be used for certain purposes for writing Hebrew. So the idea would be Ksav Ashuri, when people are on the level, or when Tisvei Kodesh, when people are on the level for it, and Ksav Ivri would be an alternate script for mundane use. So who particularly invented it, I don't think we know. But Amman, by the way, writes the reason why they used it. Why Taka do we find it, for example, on coins from the second Beis Hamikdash, though by that time they were definitely writing Ksav Ashuri, that Rambam says based on this Gemara and other Gemaras, so that's exactly that. They didn't want to use Ksav Ashuri for mundane purposes, such as coins, which are going to end up in the bathroom, or they may end up in the trash, or whatever, so therefore they continue to use Ksav Ivri for those, because that has less Kedusha. It's interesting, by the way, in the Dead Sea Scrolls, they found that most of the writing is done in Ksav Ashuri, with the exception of the name Yudke Vovke is written in Ksav Ivri. So archaeologists tend to think that that's because the people who wrote these scrolls had the notion that Ksav Ivri is more holy because it's more ancient, and therefore they would have to write the name of Hashem in that to show respect for it. It could be, of course, the other way around, based on what we're saying over here. Maybe on the contrary, maybe they didn't want that these things should be considered shameless. They shouldn't have the full Kedusha of Sifrei Torah, and therefore they would have to write Hashem's name in Ksav Ivri, so it should have lesser Kedusha. So we don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
The Gemara goes on. Tana Rabbanan. Keren, the fact that the Mizbeach has to have four kronos, those four protrusions on the top, the kevesh, and then it has to have a ramp, the yisoid, and then it has a yisoid, the ribua, and then it has to be square, all those things, ma'akvin, all those things are ma'akiv. If the Mizbeach is made without one of those features, then it's possible. An interesting point, by the way, about square, the Yerushalmi has an expression, ein meruba mishesheshes mebereshes. There's nothing naturally created that's square. You could say salt crystals, let's say, but that's, you'd see those square only under a microscope. We're talking about something, the pastures that would be square that you'd see with a naked eye. So a square, more than any other shape, represents human effort, so maybe that's the idea. In other words, the Mizbeach is meant to represent our effort in bringing Korbanos and coming close to Hashem, and therefore it has to be perfectly square. Tefillin, we know, also have to be perfectly square. Maybe that's connected with that as well. Anyway. However, continues the Braisa, Midas Orko, Midas Rochbo, Midas Kemosoi, however, the length and width and height of the Mizbeach in Ma'akvin, those are not Ma'akiv, meaning if they were done in a different size, then they're still kosher. As long as we said before, the Mizbeach has a maximum size of 60 amos, but can be up to that point. So the Gemara says, Minahani Mili, where do we know that those particular features are ma'akev? Amar Rav Huna, because each one, Amakra HaMizbeach, because in connection with each one of those features, the Torah uses the word HaMizbeach. You have Karnos HaMizbeach, so that tells us, in other words, the word HaMizbeach means it's not a Mizbeach without those things. So it says Karnos HaMizbeach, implying therefore that the Mizbeach has to have horns. You have by the Kevesh, it says Pnei HaMizbeach, the face of the Mizbeach, which means the Kevesh by which you go up to the Mizbeach. That's called the face of the Mizbeach. The Gemara is going to talk about that more on Amud Beis, how we learn which side the Kevesh was on. So therefore it says Mizbeach, it says HaMizbeach over there. The Yisod, it says Yisod HaMizbeach, and the squareness, Ravua Yiyah HaMizbeach. So therefore all those things are ma'akiv. Kol Mokum, Shenema HaMizbeach, la'akiv. So whatever it says HaMizbeach means that that particular feature is ma'akiv. So the Gemara asks Elamayafta, well, by that logic, then what about Kiur L'Rebbe? What about according to Rebbe, the decorations, V'soviv L'Rav Yosef of Yehuda, and according to Rav Yosef of Yehuda, the soviv, the ledge that they had 6 amos up from the bottom of Mizbeach that the Kohenim would walk around to apply the blood of the Chatas and to do an Ola Soiv. So you're going to tell me those things, Hochinami de Ma'akiv, are you going to tell me that those are also Ma'akiv, because it says HaMizbeach by them? Namely, Dichtiv, the Pasuk describes as follows, they're building the Mizbeach in the desert, it was made out of wood and plated with copper, and then the Pasuk says, you should make a network for it, the Pasuk says you should make for it a netting, netting made out of copper, so it's basically, it's like a netting, but instead of being made out of threads, out of ropes, it's made out of copper threads. And the Pasuk says you should place it under the karkov of the Mizbeach. So what is a karkov? B'tanya ezehu karkov. What does the word karkov mean? And Rashi points out the purpose, the Pasuk goes on to say that this network went ad chatzi HaMizbeach until the midpoint of the Mizbeach. As we learned before, and as we're going to learn further in our parak, there's a difference between the top and the bottom half of the Mizbeach. Blood of certain korbanos has to go davka on the top half, and blood of other korbanos davka on the bottom half, and therefore there needs to be a marking. In the Beis Hamikdash, there was a red line painted around the Mizbeach. In the Mishkan, we're saying that there was a copper netting, and the netting reached until that the edge of that netting was at the midpoint of the Mizbeach. So what is the karko, which the netting is under? Rebbe Omer Zekir. Rebbe says this means decorations. There was a place along the side of the Mizbeach where there were decorations over there. Rashi describes specifically it would be decorations of things like flowers and buds and interlocking networks and things like that. We find the Pesukim in Malachim describes similar decorations in the Beis Hamikdash. So according to Rebbe, the Pasuk is telling us that there has to be a strip around the Mizbeach that has decorations like that. Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda says that the karkov of the Pasuk is the soiviv. So therefore, the Pasuk says, Karkov HaMizbeach. So according to that, then it should mean that feature is also Ma'akov according to each of them. However, he explains, the word Karkov is going to say that particular feature is Ma'akov. So the answer is Ain. As a matter of fact, yes. We'll give you an example where we see a Braisa that tells us exactly that according to Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, that would be ma'akiv. And once we see that Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda holds, then we would say Rebbe, according to his opinion of what the Kaukov is, would also say that it's ma'akiv. Namely, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Now we have the story in Masechta Sota, where we know that Tzedukim didn't believe in Nisach HaMayim, because Talach L'Moshe M'Sinai, it's part of Torah Shebaal Peh. So one time it says there was a Tzedukim, Kohen Gadol, who poured the water on his feet instead of pouring on his Mizbeach, and everybody was so furious that they pelted him with their asroyim. And not only asroyim, it comes out from the story that they also, some of them also pelted him with rocks. In fact, Tosfos brings there from Yerushalmi that he was actually killed. So the Braisa says, Oisayim nifgama keren Mizbeach. On that day, from all the rocks that they were throwing, the corner of the Mizbeach was damaged. And as we learned before, the Mizbeach is damaged and it's possible. They view bul shal malach v'sasmuhu. They brought a fistful of salt and stuffed up the hole. Loy mitnesha kosher la'avoda. Now that wouldn't make it kosher for the avoda, because salt is not one of the materials that's meant to be part of the Mizbeach. another interesting point that some Mefarshim make is they couldn't actually fix it because this was on Yom Tov. So they couldn't actually fix it permanently, but they just put that, they just stuffed that in temporarily. Ella Shalo Yerom is Mizbeach Togum, just that the Mizbeach didn't look blemished. It would be a bizoyan for the Mizbeach that it should be standing there, that it should be standing there with a flaw in it. So they put the salt in just to close it up temporarily, but not that it would actually become part of the structure of the Mizbeach. So again, one way of looking at it is, so one way of looking at it was, it was Yom Tov, and therefore they couldn't decide the salt will stay there permanently, but after Yom Tov, let's say they could. However, the Ritva says that the Ritva says that no, the Mizbeach, the salt cannot be used for building the Mizbeach, so therefore, I mean, they just put it in there temporarily. And why do they need that? Why is the Mizbeach possible in that case? Because any Mizbeach that's lacking a keren or a ramp or yisoid or the squareness, and here it's lacking the squareness because it was damaged, it's possible. And Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda says, also, if it's lacking the soiviv, so we see, yes, because Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda defines the karkov of a Mizbeach as being the soiviv, then therefore, yes, he holds that the Mizbeach is possible without that. And therefore, so fine. The Braisa before that mentioned only the four things, Keren Bekevish, Yisoid V'Ribua, would be the Braisa wanted to mention only things that everybody agrees with. But in fact, yes, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda would hold the Soiv as also Ma'akiv, and then we can derive from that Rebbe would define the Karkov as being the decorations, then he would hold that that's Ma'akiv as well. So, the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, let's talk about this Karkov further. Ezehu Karkov. What is the Karkov? Now, one thing we have to realize, it actually explains, the basic meaning of the word Karkov is a groove. A groove all around something. And actually refers to a Gemara in Cholin that, for example, mentions a person is making, let's say, a wooden keli, and he still plans. He's made the actual shape of the keli, but he still plans to put decorations on it, such as putting grooves all around it. So the word, and the word over there is lacharkev, which is the same shodesh as the word karkov. So therefore, the basic meaning of karkov is grooves. So what is the karkov? Bein keren lekeren, between one protrusion, one horn of the Mizbeach, and the next one, Mokum Hiluch Ragle Akoyanim Amma. The place, one amma wide.
The groove, the kachkum.
What?
The kachkum is a groove?
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out. On the face of it, when the Braisa says Ezehu Karkov, on the face of it, it's defining the Karkov of the Pasuk. When the Pasuk says that you should place the network on the Mizbeach, Tachas Karkov on Mizbeach, and now the Braisa is saying Ezehu Karkov, then it sounds like it's defining what that Karkov is. The Gemara is going to explain soon that that's not what it means. But, yeah, so we're saying that the basic meaning of Karkov is a groove, so what is that groove? So bein keren lekeren, between one protrusion, one horn of the Mizbeach and the next, mokum hiluch ragle akoyinim amma, the place, one amma wide, where the koyinim would walk around the Mizbeach. So the idea would be, in other words, they had it was grooved, it'll be a little bit deeper than the rest of the height of the Mizbeach, so that the koyinim won't slip off. So it'll be a little bit deeper so that you'll have it'll be like a safety railing, not really because it's closer to their feet, but whatever, it would keep their feet from slipping. However, the Gemara asks, "Otu Akoinim and Keren LaKeren Abu Azli?" What do you mean? The Koinim didn't walk between one Keren and another. Because then every time they get to the Keren, how are they going to go to the next side? The Keren is an amma tall. Yeah, they could step over it. An amma is only 18 inches, but it wouldn't be bekavadik. The whole point is that on the Mizbeach, they're supposed to be taking small steps, as the Pasuk says, asher lo sigola, that your nakedness should not be revealed on it. So therefore, they're supposed to take small steps. So they can't be stepping over the Keren each time. So rather, we have to correct what it means is, you have the area of the Kronos, then one neck within that, going closer toward the middle of the Mizbeach, you have an area one amma wide, which was the area for the Kohenim to walk. So this is what we were talking about before, that for example, you have in the second Mishmikdash, the Yisoid was 32 by 32, then the Soiver was 30 by 30, because again, the Yisoid goes in one amma on each side, and then you have above the Soiver, it keeps on, it narrows, and you have 28 by 28, but then we said the Mokum HaMarocha is 24 by 24, where the extra four ammas go, is because you have one amma on each side for the Kronos, and one amma within that, for the Kohanim's walkway. So if you look at the Mizbeach from the top, you'll have a 24 by 24 area Makom HaMaracha. Surrounding that, you'll have a strip 1 amah wide going around all four sides of the Mizbeach for the Kohanim to walk. And surrounding that, you'll have a strip on each of the four corners of which is one of the Kronos. And we're saying, again, that strip was a groove. It was built a little more deeply into the Mizbeach, again, so that the Kohanim don't slip. So the question is, the question though is that by the network on the Mizbeach of the Mishkan, it says that it was supposed to be under the Karkov, going to the middle, meaning in other words that the Karkov should be someplace along the side of the Mizbeach, and then you have the network, and then you have underneath that is the network, and the bottom of it reaches until the midpoint of the Mizbeach. So you see on the face of it that if the Karakov is on top of the Mizbeach that we're saying over here, how can we call the Mikvah, which is on the side of the Mizbeach, how can it be called under the Karakov? So the answer is Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Trei Havu. In the Mizbeach, in the Mishkan, there were two things called Karakov. Chad Benoi, one of them was a decorative thing around the Mizbeach. And that would be the equivalent of the soviv in later generations. So it was there mainly for decorative purposes. It wasn't used like the soviv in the Bais HaMikdash, that they would actually stand on it to apply the blood of Korbanos. It was a ledge that stuck out around the sides of the Mizbeach as a decorative thing. And again, it was decorated with grooves, which is why it's called Karakov. And then there's another one, a functional one on top of the Mizbeach, where the Kohanim are going to walk around the top of the Mizbeach and not slip. And therefore it was also grooved, it was also built more deeply into the top of the Mizbeach. So that's that. So we've established then that anything where it says Hamizbeach, then it's Ma'akev, and yes, according to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, and according to Rabbi, then that means that would include also the Karakov, however we define the Karakov. Apparently, yeah, according to the other Chacham, who disagree with both those definitions, they would probably have to say that, yeah, the Karakov is something else on the Mizbeach, which is maybe part of the squareness or part of the Keren or something, and yes, that it would be Ma'akev. We said midas orko, midas rochve, midas kemosa in ma'akvin. We said, however, the length and width and height of the mizbeach are not ma'akiv, that even if they're a different size, then they're kosher, again, provided that we don't go, for example, beyond the 60 amos that we said before. So Omer Rabmani, Ovovad Shalif Hasenum Mizbeach Shal Samosha. However, Rabmani says, provided that it's not smaller than the Mizbeach that Moshe made. So in other words, when it says in the Pasuk by the Mishkan, the size of the Mizbeach, those are the minimums. So, what's that size? Amar Rav Yosef Amma. So Rav Yosef says that means 1 amah by 1 amah. Machaku alei. However, they laughed at Rav Yosef. How can you say such a thing? Chomish amas odach, v'chomish amas yurichah, v'ravua yer mizbeach. The Pasuk says the mizbeach was 5 by 5 amahs square. So what are you telling me? 1 amah. Amar lei Abaya. So Abaya says to Rav Yosef, Rebbe, maybe what you meant was the place of the Ma'arocha. Because, like we said before, you have an Amah for the Kronos, you have an Amah for the Kohanim's walkway. So if you have the top of the Mizbeach, there's only 5 by 5, then that means at the end you're left with a space of only an Amah by an Amah in the middle, and that would be the Makom HaMa'arocha. We talked about that a few days ago in connection with the Machlokas, with one of the Machlokas of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, where in fact, yes, according to Rabbi Yossi, that space was indeed only 1 amah by 1 amah. So Rabbi Yosef is saying, based on that, that it means that the minimum you can make the Mizbeach is 5 by 5, where that way in the end the Makom HaMa'arocha will be 1 amah by 1 amah. In fact, the Choyf Nosan points out that maybe even according to Rabbi Yehuda, we learned before, Rabbi Yehuda had said the Mizbeach was 10 by 10, because he learned that 5 by 5 means 5 in each direction from the middle, and therefore that comes out to 10 by 10. The Choyf Nosan in our Gemara says that maybe even Rabbi Yehuda would agree with what Rabbi Yosef is saying over here, that the absolute minimum is 5 by 5, because after all, the Pasuk does say 5 by 5, so even fine, you want to doubt it by Zedah Shavah, that it really means 10 by 10, but nevertheless, since the Torah phrases it on the surface 5 by 5, then that would be like that. Rabbi Yosef says, Mar de Gavre Rabahu, you, Abaya, who are a great person, a Tamil Chacham, Yoda Maikamina, you know what I'm talking about. But everybody else misunderstood, which is why they laughed. Koryalayu b'nei k'turah. So Rabbi Yosef applied to them the phrase b'nei k'turah. Here we have from this week's parasha that Avraham married k'turah, so now he nicknames them b'nei k'turah, as in, Rashi says, you're children of Avraham, but you're not of the good quality children of Avraham, like the ones who are descended from Sarah, from Yitzchak and Yaakov. Rather, you're like the b'nei k'turah, who are kind of like they're from Avraham, but you're not of the same caliber. There's a variety of interesting explanations. How could Rabbi Yosef use such a derogatory expression on them? Actually, Maharsha says that if you're going to go like that, why don't they call them Bnei Esav? Same thing. In other words, like you're of the caliber of Bnei Avraham and Yitzchak, but not Bnei Yaakov. So he said he didn't want to insult them so outright. And actually, he said that in connection with the next piece, but whatever, it's the same thing. He didn't want to insult them so outright as to call them Bnei Esav. But he says at least Bnei Keturah, after all, the Bnei Keturah, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, were also Chayev and Bris Milah. So he's hinting to them, you're at least of the caliber, you're fine, you're Jews, you have a Bris Milah, but you know what, so do the B'nai K'turah, but you're still not of a caliber of what people should be. There's a number of interesting explanations. There's a number of interesting explanations that connect it with other points as well. One of them is, we said before, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, that they were actually able to bring korbanos on the floor as well. So now the word keturah is maloshen haktara, maloshen burning. So he's telling them, you apparently belong to the school of Rabbi Yehuda, who says that you could burn korbanos on the entire floor of the Azara, and you're saying therefore that you're laughing at what I was saying, that the makom amaracha is only one amma by one amma, but in fact it's not so. We should rather understand, like I'm saying, that we should rather understand, not like Rabbi Yehuda, that in fact the limit is that in fact it really was one amma by one amma. Fine, you can burn korbanos on the rest of the floor, but that's not a reason to laugh at what I was saying. And if you are, then you're b'nei k'turah in the sense that you hold the korbanos can be burnt in a larger area. That's another explanation of why he called them b'nei k'turah. Tzon kodshim brings another point as well. Like this, you have the medrash on our parasha says, you know, Hashem first gave Avraham only one son from Hagar, but later on when he married k'turah, and Rashi says following an opinion in the medrash that k'turah is another name for Hagar, then Hashem always, when he gives again, he gives so much more, as in this case he had six children with her. So therefore, so Rabbi Yosef is telling them the same kind of thing. You're focusing on the entire Mizbeach, and you're focusing on the entire Mizbeach, but focus on the main thing, and the main thing was only one Amma by one Amma. If you look at the rest of the Mizbeach, and therefore you're laughing, how could we be talking about one Amma by one Amma, then in effect you're saying that the more important thing is like the B'nai K'turah compared to Yishmael. So, having mentioned this, that one of the Chachamim calls his Talmid B'nai K'turah, so the Gemara gives another similar example. Bnei Achse did Rab Tarfon have a Yasvi Kameh did Rab Tarfon. One time, Rab Tarfon's nephews, his sister's sons, are sitting in front of him, but they weren't saying anything. Rashi says they weren't saying anything, and in fact, Shittim Kobretis adds that in the Gemara itself. They're supposed to be talking in Torah. They should be asking questions. They should be saying what they learned, and they're not saying anything. So he wanted to encourage them to speak up. Posach v'Omar. Said Rab Tarfon spoke up and starts saying, misquoting the pasuk from our parasha, by Yosef Avraham vayikach isho shmo Yuchni. Avraham went again and married a wife, and her name was Yuchni. Now it doesn't say in the pasuk Yuchni. So in the most simple sense, Rashi says he wanted to say something just in order to get them to talk, like in order to get them to react. Amulek keturah ksiv. So they said it doesn't say Yuchni in the pasuk. It says keturah. So Rab Tarfon also applied this phrase b'nei k'turah to them. So again, it can mean, in other words, like, so Rashi says, you don't know how to talk in halacha. So therefore, like again, you're not of the caliber of what you should be. So again, Maharsha says the vort is, in other words, that he's saying, like, at best you're like b'nei k'turah in that you have a bris milah, but you expected to be on a higher level than that. The fact is, though, at least Keturah, Mela, if he'd called him B'nai Esav, that would be a gross insult, but Keturah, after all, as we say, she was called Keturah, because Rashi mentions on the Pasuk, because her deeds were pleasing like Keturah, so therefore it's not quite such an insult to them. But he's telling them that you're still not where you're supposed to be. So again, you have different explanations that we said before about why was Rabbi Yosef calling them B'nai Keturah. The point in the iris says over here, he means the word Keturah, here we say Keturah was called that, Rashi says, she koshra pischa, she tied up her opening, meaning that she remained faithful. She didn't go, she wasn't going to mezana or marry anybody else between when Avraham divorced her all those years before and now when Avraham remarried her. Because the word kotar in Aramaic means to tie. So now he's telling them that your lips, your mouths are tied up. And you're not speaking where you're, and you're not speaking like you're supposed to. So that's another reason. That's another reason why he calls them Bnei Keturah. There's a sicha where the Rebbe talks about it, and most of the sicha is talking about the fact of why Rashi specifically identifies Keturah as vulgar, and why the pasuk says by Yosef that he increased again. But the Rebbe talks about in this connection with the story with Reb Tyrfin's. There's a variety of explanations also why does he pick specifically the word Yuchni? Why does he pick the name Yuchni instead of, if he has to use a name instead of Hogger, why specifically Yuchni? So a couple of them first refer to that there's Gemaras that mention someone named Yuchni as a famous magician, and maybe therefore that connects with Hagar, who came from Mitzrayim, which was the world capital of Kishuv. But that brings a different point, actually. There's a Gemara in Sota that refers to a woman named Yuchni who would pretend to be a great tzaddikus, and when women were close to giving birth, she would use Kishuv on them to prevent them from giving birth, and then she'd pretend like she's a great tzaddikus and is davening for them, and then meanwhile she'd be secretly undoing her Kishuv, and that way they'd give birth. So in other words, he's telling them that the woman is named Yuchni in the sense that Nisim are going on over here. She makes it look at least like there are Nisim going on over here. So Avram married a wife with Shmo Yuchni, that it should be that it's a result of her tefillas. So they tell him Keturah Ksir. The fact is, it says Keturah. So he's telling them But if you're going to be Keturah Meloshin Ketira, meaning in other words, again, you're going to be tying up, then you're not understanding the Torah, and you're not speaking up in my presence, then you're not like Yuchni, who at least caused children to be born, but rather you're like closed up, so you're more like the meaning of Keturah, closed up and not accessible. And then the Rebbe also connects it with this idea of Mila that Marsha is mentioning over here. The fact is that the Mila, in a way, is higher. There's a mimer in Torah Ur, which is often said by Bris Mila, that explains that Mila is actually higher even than Shem Havaya, even higher than Seder Ishtautlus. So he wants to tell them, you know what, then I'm calling you Bnei Keturah, as in other words, we have to bring in a higher level of Torah into you, since you're not capable of speaking and learning on your own. And Reb Tyrfin is very concerned about that, because they're his sister's sons, and the Gemara says that nephews, a woman's sons, resemble her brothers, so therefore it kind of reflects on Reb Tyrfin himself. So he wants to bring them to a level higher even than Seder Ishtalshlis, higher even than Torah and Shem Havaya, and therefore he calls them Bnei Keturah, because Bnei Keturah are higher than Mila.
Did Keturah, which came from the capital of Kishuv and Avodah Zarah, do the same thing as Sarah? She rejected her... her family who was practicing Avodah Zarah.
She definitely did. That's how she comes to be part of Avraham and Sarah's household in the first place. We find what says that the Medrash says that when Pareh kidnapped Sarah and then he was forced to return her with tremendous presents, then he also gave her his daughter as a maidservant, because he said, better, I see what caliber people you are. I'd rather my daughter be a maidservant in your house rather than a princess in my place full of Avodah Zarah. So, yeah. So actually, Rashi mentions when in Parshas Vayera, when she left, when Avraham and Sarah kicked her out, the pasuk says Vatelach Vatesa, she went and wandered and got lost in the desert of Beersheba. So Rashi says over there she returned to the idol worship that she had grown up with. But now we're saying many years later, she did tshuva, and that's also the Rebbe talks about in that sicha. This is Reb Tyrfin is trying to bring this level, this higher level of tshuva, and again this higher level of mila into his nephews, and therefore he calls them Bnei Keturah in token of that.
What made her change her mind from coming back from Avodah Zarah to Yiddishkeit?
Ultimately, it was the influence of Avraham and Sarah. In fact, there's a different sicha where the Rebbe talks about, here our parasha is called Chayesara, and the name of a parasha is supposed to represent the toichen of it, after all. But here, the parasha begins with Sarah passing away. Why is it Chayesara? And so the Rebbe explains in a sicha, because everything in the parasha is an outgrowth of Sarah's life. The fact that there was a Yitzchak, the fact that there was a Rivka, and was saying also the fact that there was a Keturah, the fact that Hagar changed and transformed herself so completely and became Keturah, is all because of the influence that Sarah had had on her many years ago, even though she had run away from it, and even though she had been kicked out from it, nevertheless, it still stayed with her, and eventually it was poil on her again.
Where do we know that? Is there a Midrash that talks about that?
The Midrash says that, the Midrash says, Rashi brings it on the Pasuk, that Keturah is another name for Hagar, and gives two reasons. Number one, Keturah, Meloshon Keturahs, because now her deeds, her Maisim, were as pleasing as Keturahs, and another reason is because Kotar is the Aramaic word for tying up, and it means that now she had tied herself up, she had kept faithful, and hadn't gone and remarried or been Mizana with anybody until now Avraham remarried her.
Which Midrash is that?
It's Bereishis Rabbah on the Pasuk. It's not the only opinion. The Midrash does bring other opinions that Keturah was somebody else, but the mainstream, the most well-known opinion, because it actually brings it on the Pasuk, is that Keturah is Hagar.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go on. Omer Abaya Bar Huna, Omer Abchama Bar Guya. Gzirin Sha'asa Moshe, the pieces of wood that Moshe made. So now you have again, let's look back at the Mizbeach and the Mishkan. We just said that it was 5 by 5 amas, and that means the Mokam Amaracha of it was only 1 amah by 1 amah. So Moshe made the standard size pieces of wood, the standard size logs of wood that are going to be placed on the Maracha, Urkan Amma Varoichban Amma. The length is an Amma, the width is an Amma. Now, does that literally mean that they're like square board shaped pieces? Maybe it means that every two pieces together would be an Amma by an Amma. So each one would be an Amma by a half an Amma. The Revelf of Risker talks about that possibility. The Shittim of Kubetis asks if they're an Amma by an Amma, literally, and then the Mokum Amarocha is an Amma by an Amma, where would there be room to put kindling? You have to put like little small chips of wood so that the larger logs will catch fire. So he says maybe they would put them on their edges, and therefore there's room. But according to the Velvel, you don't need to say that. You could say that every two of them together take up an Amma, and that still leaves room between them, next to them or something. For they didn't put them necessarily one next to the other. They could put them one a little bit on top of the other, and therefore that would be, and therefore there'd be room for kindling. Anyway, the Oivyon, that's as far as the length and the width. The Oivyon, the thickness of them, Kemachat Goydesh Saw, was the thickness of the piece of wood that they used for smoothing out a saw measure. The Gemara tells us in Bava Basra, the way they often measured out grain or flour or other things like that in those days was they would pour it into a container, and then it would form a heap on top of the container, and then they would use a leveling stick to level it off. So there was a standard size stick that they used for that purpose, so the thickness of the logs for the Mizbeach is the thickness of that stick. Now, what kind of Amma are we talking about? Amr Rav Yumia ba'Amma G'duma. So Rav Yumia says that means they used for this purpose a short Amma, because you don't want it to stick out of the Mokam Amaracha. You don't want it to stick out into the area of the Koyanim's walkway. However, Amr Rav Yosef, the Lav Hainu D'Tanya, however, Rav Yosef says, no, because isn't this what we learn in the Braisa? Ala Eitzim Ashala Eish Ashala Mizbeach. The Pasuk says, the wood which is on the fire, which is on the Mizbeach, from which we learn, Shalo Yu Eitzim Yotzim Na Mizbeach Klum, means that the wood should not be sticking out of the Mizbeach at all. So if it was a short Amma, and some of the Foshim explain, a short Amma would mean an Amma of five Tvachim, then there's no reason for the Pasuk to warn that, because it's not going to stick out anyway. The Mokam Amaracha, according to that, is a full-size Amma. The pieces of wood are smaller than that. So what's the problem? Why does the Pasuk have to warn us that it shouldn't stick out? It's not that it was an Amma G'duma, but rather an Amma Mitzimtzemes. It was precisely an Amma. Tosfos brings from the Oruch that the word in Rabbi Yumi's explanation was not Geduma, but rather Gruma, which would also mean like a little bit smaller than it's supposed to be. And Rabbi Yosef is saying that no, it just means that it has to be exactly an Amma. One possibility is we find in some places in some contexts of Halacha, we have this what's called Amma Shechetes versus Amma Mitzumtzemes. So you have an Amma is composed of 6 Tfachim, and a Tefach is the width of a hand, between 3 and 4 inches, according to Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah and the Chazon Ish, respectively. So now, what you can do is when you're pressing the 6 hands together to form the Amma, you can press them very tightly together, or you can, and for that matter, the fingers can also be pressed very tightly together, or they can be held a little more relaxed. So the relaxed one is called an Amma Shechetes, or Shechetes, and the more tight one is called an Amma Atzeves. There's a difference. It's a difference of like 1 or 2% between them. So therefore, so that might be what Rabbi Yosef is saying. You do an amma utsevis, for example. Meanwhile, a makam amaracha is an amma seicheches. So therefore, so you have that little bit of leeway, which also gives you room for kindling. But the point is also that way. So the pasuk is telling you do that so that the wood doesn't stick out of the makam amaracha and stick out into the kohenim's walkway. Now let's talk about the location of the kevesh. Tanhasam, we learn in the mission in Midas, kevesh hoyo ledremesh ha-mizbeach, there was a ramp on the south side of the mizbeach, orach shloshim u'shtayim al-roich av-shesh esrei. It was 32 amas long and 16 amas wide. So we're going to focus on, first of all, on how we know specifically that it was on the south. Menahani mili, where do we know from that it was that down the south? So Amar Rav Huna, Amar Kro, because the pasuk says the shochat oisay al yerech hamizbeach tzafoina. Talks about an oila, specifically about an oila of sheep. It says that you should shecht it on the yerech of the mizbeach on the north. Now the simple meaning of yerech hamizbeach means the side of the mizbeach, but the word yerech literally means the thigh. So we're meant to understand. Now since like we learned on Amar Aleph that the ramp is called the face of the Mizbeach, because you walk up from the Mizbeach from it, so it's considered like a face. Well, therefore, imagine a person, his face and his head is in one direction, and his thigh, his legs, are in the other direction. So therefore, so we see from that if the thigh of the Mizbeach is described as being in the north, then the face, the ramp has to be in the south. So they want to ask, Ema Yerach Batsofen upon a Batsofen. How do we know? Maybe it would be like, how do you know? It's like a person when he's laying down. Maybe it's like a person is sitting up, where his head and his feet are in the same direction. So Ema Yerach Batsofen upon a Batsofen. Like when a person is sitting, his thighs are directly below his face, and they're both facing in the same direction. Amar Rava, Romi Gavra Ape. So Rava says, because you have to imagine, like the person is laying on his face. In other words, exactly that. So, imagine that the person is laying down, and then his head is in one direction, and his thigh is in the other direction. So Abaye says, on the contrary, compare it to a person who's sitting upright, and then his head and his thighs and his legs are in the same direction. So Rava answers him, Ravuaksiv, because the pasuk says Ravua. Now the simple meaning Ravua, we've been talking about all this time, means square. But the word Ravua is also related to the word Rava, which in Aramaic means to lay down. You have, for example, Reveya and Nirba, for example, to the bestiality and all that. So you have the word Ravua can also mean to lay down. So it says Ravua, from which we darshan, that it means that it's like a person laying down. So they want to ask, well, we boil it to Merab Rabui. What do you mean, though? We need that pasuk to tell us the Mizbeach is square. All this time, we've been talking about the idea that the Mizbeach is square. The Mizbeach is square. So how are you also using it to mean that it's like a person laying down? So the answer is Niksiv Meruba. If it meant just square, it would have said the word Meruba. So therefore it says Ravua, so therefore you can douch in it means laying down. So the question is, okay, but the Hebrew word for laying down is Ravut. So if it meant to be laying down, then it should say like that. Amalei, Ravua Ksiv. So Rava tells him, well, that's why it says Ravua, de Mashma Hochi, Mashma Hochi, where it can mean, it can have both meanings. It can mean square, but it can also mean laying down. And that way we can douch in both points from it, that the Mizbeach has to be square, but also that it should be compared to a person laying down, and therefore his head is in one direction and his legs are in the other. Meanwhile, a Tana of a Braisa learns it from a different source. The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, the Pasuk says in Yechezkel, describing the Mizbeach, in the third Beis Mikdash, Shibonim Meher Bemenu, he says, Umalisehu Penois Kodim. The way to go up to the Mizbeach, which is the ramp, should be facing to the east. So what does that mean? Kol Pinois, Shata Poina, Lo Yu, El Jerech Yemin, Le Mizrach. Means whenever you're turning from the Kevesh to the Mizbeach, it should be that you're going to the right, which means you're going to the east. So the only way to do that, how would you have that when you make a right turn off the Kevesh, you're going to be facing east? It has to be that the Kevesh, therefore, is on the south. So the Gemara asks, "Ve'ema derech smoil lamizrach." How do you know though? All the pasuk is saying is that you have to turn and you're facing east. So maybe on the contrary, it means you should be turning toward the left and then be facing east. So maybe it means on the contrary. Maybe the kevesh is supposed to be on the north side, and when you make a left turn, then you're facing east. So the answer is loy sakadaydach. You can't think that way. It has to be that the turn that he makes is towards the right. D'toni Romi by Yechizkiah, Romi by Yechizkiah Torah Breiser, on the side over here, it says it's supposed to be Romi by Yechezkel, who's, that's what he's called throughout Shas. Anyway, Yamsha also Shloimer. We have the sea that Shloimer made. The Yamsha Shloimer was a big copper tank that held as much water as much water, the Gemara says elsewhere, with 150 mikvahs. The Kohenim would use it as a mikvah, and they also, the Gemara mentions, the Yerushalmi, I think, mentions that they would refill the kiyur from it. Anyway, so it stood there in the Azorah, in the first place of Mikdash, and the Pasuk says, Oymid al shneim osir amudim boker. Amudim doesn't say in the pasuk. Oymid al shneim osir boker. It was standing. We have this in that's an Aftorah of Vayakel. It was standing on 12 copper oxen. 12 oxen, which the pasuk says they were made out of copper. The Yerushalmi, by the way, mentions that the feet of the oxen were hollow so that the water, like this, you would have. There was a water supply not far from the Beis Mikdash. Ein Eitzam, we learned about it in the previous parak, that it would flow down by gravity, and then it could go up. Then it could fill up the tier from the bottom without needing pumps, because then it wouldn't be a kosher mikveh. So the oxen were hollow so that the water could flow through them and be able to fill up the mikveh, the yamshol shloima above them. So the pasuk says shloisha ponim tzafayna, three of these oxen were facing toward the north, or shloisha ponim yama, and three were facing toward the west, or shloisha ponim negra, three to the south, or shloisha ponim mizracha, and three to the east. So we learn from that, says Rami by Yechezkel, called Pinus, Shatapoina, Loyu, El Derechimim, the Mizra. From that we learn that you have to be turning right, because when you look at the directions as described in this passage, you're going to the right. First you have the ones that are facing north, then the ones that are facing west, which means you're making a right turn, counterclockwise, to see those, then to the south, then to the east, so that involves you're going counterclockwise, that means you're turning towards the right. It means that you're putting your right foot first. So therefore, so we see that you have to always, your turns should be towards the right. So they want to ask how, now, in other words, the Lavush gives an explanation of it. In other words, if you're turning counterclockwise, you are actually turning left. However, if you imagine it rather, if you're walking straight and then you make a turn counterclockwise, then yes, you're turning left. However, the point is, in other words, if you're facing something, and you're now turning, and you're turning in a counterclockwise direction, it means you're moving to your right. Think about it. You try it for yourself, for example. Stand in front of a table, let's say, and then walk around the table, facing towards that table the whole time, and you'll see that you're constantly moving. You'll see that as you're moving to your right, then you're going in a counterclockwise direction around it. So therefore, the same thing, when the pasuk is describing, when you're looking at these shnei masa baka, it would be the same thing if you're facing them the whole time, and he explains the same thing with the mizdeach. The kohenim wouldn't be walking along the sovet with their sides of the mizdeach, they would be walking around the sovet with their face facing toward the mizdeach, and therefore that's what we mean over here. The Lavush, by the way, says an interesting point in this regard. He says, even naturally, he says, if you look behind you, if like all of a sudden, as a sudden thing, you need to look behind you, you'll tend to turn the right side of your body and look over your left shoulder. So therefore, the Torah is telling you, do that also. When you're turning, keep to that natural way of doing things and turn your right side first. The Taz and others argue with that, but anyway. So therefore, so we learn from that you have to be turning right. So the Gemara says, when we borrow the Gufay, what do you mean? The Pasuk needs to tell us that there are three facing in every direction. So how can you learn from that about the directions that you should be turning? And the answer is, and the answer is, in Cain, if all it meant was to tell us that, ponim, ponim, lomali, why does it have to say by each group of oxen that they're facing? So therefore we learn from that it means they have to be facing and they have to be turning towards the right. So again, therefore, if the Pasuk in Yechezkel is telling us that when you come off the ramp onto the Mizbeach, you have to be facing towards the east, then Malaseu Pnos Kadim, and since putting that together with Rami Bar Yechezkel's point about always turning to the right, then it means the Kevesh has to be on the south. So the Gemara continues on this about this. Shal Rav Shimon about the Kevesh and the Mizbeach. Shal Rav Shimon ben Yosi ben Lakunya asked Rav Yosi. Rav Shimon ben Yosi ben Lakunya asked Rav Yosi. Rav Shimon Yossi ben Makonia, we find that he was a relative of Rav Shimon ben Yochai, I think. But anyway, he was a great Tana. So he asks Rav Yossi, Oimer Hoy Rav Shimon ben Yochai. Now Rav Shimon ben Yochai used to say, Avu Yesh ben Kevesh l'mizbeach, but there's a space, there's an air space between the ramp of the mizbeach and the mizbeach itself. So is that so? Omaloi, said Rabbi Yossi, says, of course, but after Iyata Omer Kain, do you disagree with that? It has to necessarily be that way. Balokran Nema, the Pasuk says, V'asisa Oilus Secha Abasa V'adam. The Pasuk says, you should bring your Oilus, the flesh and the blood. That means there's a hekesh between the flesh and the blood. Madam Bizrika, just like the blood of an Oilah, is put on the Mizbeach with Zrika, as we learned in the previous parak about Shrein Matron Shrein Amba. Abasa Bizrika, the same way the meat has to be thrown onto the Mizbeach. Therefore, there has to be a space over there in order to force the Koyan. Otherwise, he could just walk directly up to the top of the Mizbeach and put the meat on the fire. So instead he has to throw it. Tosfos points out the Gemara is going to say further on that anyway you needed there to be a little bit of space because the mizbeach has to be perfectly square, and if you have a kevesh attached to it then it's not perfectly square. But the point is, if it was only that, you would need only a tiny little bit of space. But here we're saying you need a larger amount of space in order that they should actually throw the korbanos. Omolois of Shimon Yosi ben Makunia says, yeah, I know that, but Shani Omer, but I say that doesn't necessarily mean that there has to be a space between the kevesh and the mizbeach. Omer, but sad malrocha v'zorik, he could just stand next to the malrocha and throw the meat and the pieces of the korbanos onto there. There doesn't necessarily have to be they standing on the top of the kevesh and throwing it from there. Omolois, so Rabbi Yosi answers him. Kruzorik. Now think about it. When he throws the meat, Lamarocha Dluka Huzorik, is he throwing it onto a wood pile that's already burning, or the Marocha Shaina Dluka Huzorik, or on a wood pile that does not yet have a fire on it? Heavy Lamarocha Dluka Huzorik. Of course he's throwing it onto, there's already a fire there. There's a fire of Minashamayim always there, and there's a fire that the Koyanim would bring there every day. So of course. So anyway, he couldn't be putting it directly on the fire without burning himself. So of necessity, Hosam Mishum Delayefshir. So if he just stood next to the fire and threw it on, it would be just out of necessity because he can't put it on without doing it. So for that you don't need a hekish. Therefore, of necessity, the hekish has to be telling us that there has to be a space that not just because of the heat of the fire, but also because he has to be doing it from a distance. So yes, that means that there has to be an airspace. Rapapa says there's a different way you can understand it. Kidam. Yes, if you're comparing the meat to the blood, then compare it to the blood as follows. Ma dam avir karkamafsiko. When it comes to the blood, you're dashing it on the mizbeach, and there's floor space that is interrupting between where the kohen is standing and the mizbeach. The kohen is standing a foot or two away from the mizbeach and taking the bowl full of blood and dashing the blood onto onto the corner of the mizbeach, and therefore that means it's going over a part of the floor. Af baser, aver karkam, af sikar, the same way. When it comes to the meat, there has to be floor space of the azara that is interrupting between where he's standing and where he's throwing it onto, and therefore that also means that there has to have been space between the kevesh and the mizbeach. Tosfos points out that actually we learned before that the kevesh actually overhung two amas, the ama of the soviv and the ama of the yisoid. So in that case, there's not necessarily actual floor space in between, but we just mean, in other words, there's space further down between them, and not just a tiny amount of space, but rather a larger amount. There is an interesting point, actually. There is an interesting point. Rav Hai Goin learns that there were three rows of paving stones. We know the whole Azara was paved with stones, precious stones. Even the Rambam says costly stones. The whole Azara was paved with that, and they were laid out. They were laid in rows, as we find in the Gemara and Yuma. And Rav Hai Goin says there were three rows between the end of the kevesh and the mizbeach. He says that's why, corresponding to that, is why the Chachamim made a takana that we should take three steps back at the end of Shemona Esrei. The idea being, the same way as the Koyan would go up to the top of the kevesh and throw the pieces of the korban onto the fire, and then he wouldn't turn his back to the mizbeach, he would walk down backwards, respectfully. The same way we do the same thing when we shayos Shemona Esrei, is to walk three steps back. Tosfos actually later in the Masechta also points out there must have been. He was the Gemara of Uli who said that it was just the Amma Sovid and the Amma and the Amma Yesod, but in fact, based on this Gemara over here, there was Karka, then there must have been a little more than that. So that could also fit very nicely with Rabbi Chaim Golin's explanation that there were three rows there. Okay. The Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yehuda, here all this time we've been talking about the main Kevesh and the Zeach. But Amar Rav Yehuda, Shnei Kvoshim Ktanim Yotzim in a Kevesh. There were two smaller ramps that branched off of the large Kevesh, Shabahen Ponim, the Yesod Vel Soiviv. They would use those to turn to the Yesod and to the Soiviv. So you can see actually in Shittim Kovetzis, there's a diagram looking from the top of the Mizbeach of what they look like. So you have, there's the main Kevesh, and then you have branching off in one direction is one that goes to the Soiviv, and branching off in the other direction is one that goes to the Yesod. The idea is, in other words, how is the Kohen going to get onto the Soiviv? The Kevesh goes on as a ramp, and it goes in a slope all the way to the top of the Mizbeach. Meanwhile, the Soiviv is three amas below the surface of the Mizbeach, so you have to have some way of getting there. So there was a smaller ramp that branched off the main one that he would go up to the Soiviv from there. And when you say in the Mishnah, of our Kevesh, or front of our Soiviv, that we learned in the previous parak, he would start going up the main ramp, and then he would go up that side ramp. And then there was another one going down to the Yesod, so that when he finishes going around, let's say he does a Chatas, he goes around the Mizbeach and does the blood of the Chatas, afterwards he needs to come down and pour the remainder of the blood on the Yesod, so there'd be a small ramp to get him down to the Yesod. Shittim Kovetzis points out, why doesn't he just go down the main ramp and then walk over to the Yesod? The reason is because that's too long, and maybe the blood might congeal. Tosfos also discusses a little later on Daf Samach Daled the possibility that there may have actually been. Now you think of it. So we're saying there's a ramp to go up to the Soiviv. How do you get down from the Soiviv afterwards? If he went all around the four sides of the Mizbeach and went to the four corners on the Soiviv, how does he get down from there? So Tosfos explains that there must have also been another smaller ramp over there coming down from the Soiviv for him to be able to get down to the floor from there. Rashi later on doesn't mention that, so according to Tosfos explains, according to Rashi, apparently what he would do is after he went around the four sides of the Soiviv, he would have to turn around, retrace his steps, and come down off the Soiviv from the one little ramp that goes there. And continues the Gemara, continues Rabbi Yehuda, both of these ramps are separated from the Mizbeach by a tiny hair, by a hair's breadth. Mishum Shenema, Soviv, because the Pasuk says, Soviv, the Mizbeach has to be able to be surrounded all around, so in other words, there should be a perfect square without anything attached to it, so therefore you can't have any of these ramps attached to it. But Rav Abohu, he's saying from Soviv, implying the entire circumference of the Mizbeach has to be able to be surrounded without surrounding anything else. Rav Abohu, Amar Ravua, Rav Abohu says we can learn the same thing from the fact that it calls it Ravua, square, which implies, in other words, that it has to be a perfect square without anything attached to it. Now, the Gemara points out, we need both. The Itzrich, the Michtav, Soviv, the Itzrich, the Michtav, Ravua. It actually needs to say both things, both Soviv and Ravua. We couldn't have learned one without the other. The Ifkas of Rahmana Soviv, if it said only Soviv, have I meant it, the Ogel Magel. You would say, you know what it means? That the Mizbeach could be round. Soviv, after all, can mean just a round. It can mean a shape, so it can be a round shape. Kos of Rahmana Ravua, therefore the Torah says it has to be square. The Kos of Rachmana Ravua, but if only said square, have a minute, you would think it just means it has to be four corners. The Orich the Kotin, maybe it could be long and skinny, it could be a rectangle. So therefore, Kos of Rachmana Saviv, therefore the Pasuk says Saviv, meaning that all sides have to be the same size. In addition, you also have, just like by Trillin, it's not enough that all four sides are the same size, it has to be that all the angles are 90 degrees. It has to be a square rather than a diamond shape. Okay. Finishing off this discussion of the Kevesh, the Gemara says, Tanan Hossam, we learn in the Mishnah in Midas, a Kevesh Ramazbeach Shishim Ushtayim. The Kevesh plus the Mizbeach together took up 62 amas of space. So the question is, how 62? The Mizbeach we said was 32. The Kevesh we said was also 32. So that should make 64. So the answer is, Nimsa Pereach, as we learned a few days ago, Nimsa Pereach, Amal Yesod, V'Amal Soiviv. It comes out that the Kevesh overhung one Amma over the Yesod and one Amma over the Soiviv. So therefore, in other words, the amount of floor space that it took up was only 30 Ammas, and therefore, so even though we call it 32, we mean, in other words, if you were to measure from the top edge of it, if you were to drop a line from there down to the floor, and then measure the base base of the Kevesh, which goes at right angles to that, then you'd have 32 Amos. But the actual base, as it was built, was only 30 because they had two Amos sticking over the Mizbeach. Tosis points out, we learned before that there was, according to one opinion, there was no Yisoid at all. There was no physical Yisoid on the southern side, which is where the Kevesh was. So then it means that it's only overhanging the Soviv and the space where the Yisoid would have been, which in that case, the Gemara could have answered that in that case, it was maybe the Gemara could have answered that then in that case, it's 63, that maybe it only overhangs the Soviv. There's a discussion in that point, by the way, it comes out. Now, the Gemara could have answered. The Gemara instead could have said that when we say the Kevesh is 32, maybe it means the slope of the Kevesh is 32 amas long. But the Gemara is not doing that, implying the base of it was 32, 30 after you subtract that overhang, and that means the slope of it was longer, because, of course, the diagonal is always going to be longer than the length of either of the sides. So the Gemara says, Amar Rami Bar Chama, so Rami Bar Chama says in this connection, Kol Kivshei Kvashim, all the large and small ramps that there were there. We just talked about the small ramps that are attached to the Kevesh, but in addition, also there was, for example, the Gemara in Yuma tells us that they made a ramp for the Sarad HaMashkaleach. When they sent the Sarad LaAzazel, they would have a ramp that the guy would go down to leave Yerushalayim. And for example, you had And there was a similar ramp they would build for the Parah Adruma when they were taking it to Harazesim. So all those ramps, Shalish Amas La'ama, the slope was 3 Amas to an Amma, meaning for every Amma of height, it would go 3 Amas in length, which is actually fairly steep. Someone was pointing out that, for example, nowadays you have ramps for like the handicapped or whatever. They're supposed to be more like 1 in 12. But here we're saying they had the ramp was 1 amma height for every 3 ammas of length. With the exception of the main kevesh and the mizbeach, which Rashi explains, they were carrying heavy limbs of korbanos up it, so therefore they had to make a gentler slope, especially because it was smooth, so it would have to be a gentler slope. So there, for each amma of height, let's calculate. We said before that it was 32 long, and it was 9 ammas tall because it reached until the top of the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach was 10 ammas, but that's including the Kronos. So 32 in 9. So therefore, by dividing it, you have Sholosh ammas, 3 ammas for each amma of height, Umechzeh, and a half amma, the Etzba, plus an Etzba, which is 1/4 of a tefach, u'shlish etzva, and another third of an etzva, v'zachrusa, zachrusa literally means the thickness. So that would mean, in other words, the measurements that we're using are using the thickness of the thumb rather than when we talk about etzbois, usually we mean the width of a thumb. So in other words, it comes out, according to putting all those numbers together, it comes out 3.555 amas, 3 amas and 5/9 of an amma. So there's a different gears of a zutarsa, which means instead of a zachrusa, there's a different gears of a zutarta, which means with a small thumb. So according to that, the other way around, then the thing would be then that last bit would be measured with a smaller finger than usual. Tosfos discusses the exact calculation and doesn't mean that the Kevesh actually reached the exact top of the Mizbeach. Rashi brings a different girsa from his Rebbeim that it actually didn't reach the exact top of the Mizbeach. It was 1/4 amma lower. And then Tosfos discusses. So the point is, Tosfos says, even if it didn't reach the exact top of the Mizbeach, if there was a fraction of an amma difference, then it's not so bad. Shitim Kubetzis goes further and makes more calculations about that. Tosfos also wonders, by the way, what about the Mizbeach and the Mishkan? So the Mishkan, according to Rabbi Yossi, we said the Mizbeach was 10 amas tall. And they had much less space to work with because the whole width of the chotzer there was only 50 amas. And especially if we say, like we said before, that the Mizbeach was in the south side of the Azara, then you really only have 20 amas to work with to put a ramp over there. And it would have to be a very, very steep ramp. So steep, in fact, that in Halacha, in Hilchos Shabbos, for example, such a steep ramp as there would have had to be in the Mishkan is actually considered a wall in Halacha. So Tosfos says that maybe Rabbi Yossi would have to say that the Mizbeach was indeed in the north side, and therefore that would allow just enough room to have a ramp of the same slope we're talking about over here, one amma height to every 3.5 and a slightly more ammas in length, and therefore that would still be, it would still be like that, and therefore it would be a bit of a gentler slope, which would be easier therefore for the Kohenim who are carrying heavy pieces of korbanos.